Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis
and Jeff Webb,
and you're listening to Tax Tuesday. Welcome to another Tax Tuesday, the eve of the presidential debates, the first between Trump and Biden, and or Toby and Jeff. So Jeff is here. We're ready. We're ready, right? Just teasing. Hey, we're going to dive right in because I want to let you guys get out of here at a reasonable hour so that you can get in and get your popcorn, watch the theatrics. First off, Tax Tuesday rules. You can ask live questions, and we'll do our very best to answer before the end of the webinar. We sometimes have about 10,000 people registered. Sometimes it's a lower number. We'll see how we're doing tonight. I have a feeling that a lot of you guys are getting ready for the debate, so we'll see what ends up happening. So if you have a question tonight, there's a very good chance that we'll be able to answer. If you need a real detailed, specific answer to your particular question, you really do need to become a Platinum member. It's $35 a month. There's a sign-up fee that it can be waived depending on what you do with us as far as structuring and the organizations that you come through. So you want to make sure you're reaching out to us and seeing what that is. And that is $35 a month, unlimited Q&A from our attorneys and planners. And you can ask a tax question in writing and they'll get an answer to you, or you can become a tax client and they'll do your prep and everything. All right, this is fast, fun, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. So every Tax Tuesday is about you guys and making sure that we get all the questions answered. Interesting stuff that we're going to be going over tonight. So first off, we're going to delve into the New York Times article on Trump's taxes. I mean, there's a lot of commentary on it. Can't turn on a news channel where they're not having some opinion as far as what's going on with Trump's taxes. We're also going to take a look at Biden's, to be fair, just to level it out a little bit, since he seems to be getting by without too much scrutiny as to his taxes, which he just released his 2019s today. You're talking about two millionaires. Everybody that's going to be on that stage tonight makes quite a bit of money. So we'll see what they use, what kind of structures they use, and what their planning entails. So we'll go over that tonight. Here's the questions also that we'll be going over. Can you withdraw some earnings from a Roth IRA if you held it for 5 years or more and you are under 59 and a half years old? Do you know the IRS code that supports your answer? I don't know about the code. We'll get you the answer in all this. We mentioned someone who makes $3 million in income who saved in taxes by routing $1 million to a C-Corp that was acting as a lending arm. How did he structure this? Wasn't there an issue with accumulated tax or personal holding company income? So I'll give you guys a little bit on this when we come to it, but we'll answer that. If I live in one state and use my home office for a tax deduction, but have rented an apartment in another state for business purposes, can I use the apartment for a business deduction, utilities as well? What are the laws for purchasing a vehicle for business to use as a deduction? We'll go over that. Is there a way to get around being taxed from the gains, profits from doing flips? And flips is real estate, buying a property, fixing it up and selling it. If you are renting out a condo and taking depreciation on it, and then the following year decide to live in the condo yourself, what do you do about depreciation? Here, I'm going to fix this real quick. Since I have my handy dandy pen, I'm going to make that a question. I'm selling my house in Mexico and I'm being charged 35% capital gains tax. I'm being charged on the currency that has doubled 10 to 1 to 20 to 1. Can I avoid that? My home has not increased in value, only the currency devalued. Do I also need to pay capital gains tax or anything of the sort for the U.S.? Good question. I threw that in there because this is kind of fun. And it might be interesting for some of you guys that do have properties outside the United States. My cousin and I are looking to purchase a flip property. Can we both use our separate LLCs for the transaction? Or is it better to create a new partnership LLC? So we're going to go over all these tonight. We're going to have very fun, like a lot of fun. But before we do that, because I like giving stuff away, we always do, I'm just going to tell you guys, join us for October 17th. It's another Infinity Investing Workshop. If you have not been to one, please join us. They're a lot of fun. And you'll learn kind of what we do from the backside of doing taxes is you get to see who's successful and who's not, who's full of donkey do versus who's actually making money, they're usually pretty quiet. They don't talk about it much. Right. So we can just say, hey, we know the traits. We see it repeatedly. Who does well and who does not? And the people that make money tend to have common traits. So by all means, it's join us. It's a one day, bring some young people. I always say bring the teenagers before they get in debt, bring young adults so they understand the power of a dollar and what it means to actually create wealth. And so we'll go over that. Now let's talk about our presidential candidates. Tonight is the night. So the New York Times article, and Jeff, I know we've chatted a little bit about it, but they seem to be upset with him. And you had a pretty good comment. You're more concerned about the debt than the actual tax, right?
Yeah, I just look at that picture and just sigh.
Jeff, we're not going to ask you politics, but you're looking at two candidates. So when you sigh, you
do that. I'm afraid of listening to the debates that my IQ may actually drop.
Oh, my gosh. you could sue the governmental, the debate committee saying you made me dumber. No. Come on.
Okay. I know there are strong supporters on both sides, and a lot of the strong supporters are going to be slinging arrows at the other side. There's been much to do about Trump's tax returns, and now I'm sure it will be Biden's tax returns. And one of the things I've thought for the past several years as they've been trying to get Trump's returns out of him is, what do they expect to see in there that's really going to give him any kind of secret information?
He is required to disclose the financial information. I think that every time you see him say, hey, I disclose everything, my returns aren't going to tell you that much. Anybody who's done real estate know this is the case. Your return doesn't really tell you that much. Mm-hmm. I can look at somebody's K-1 and not really get an idea of whether it's making much. Maybe I can look at the distributions and say, hey, they're pulling some cash out of it. But if they're at risk for it, shoot, I can refi a building. I can refi my house and pull the money out, and I don't have to pay tax on it.
Right.
So, you know, so I think it's a bit of a misnomer. They're going to say, oh, I'm going to look at these returns. All they're looking for is gotchas.
And he has been audited for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. He's being honest about that and saying, I can't release them. I think his attorneys are probably saying, do not release your returns because you're going to have 100,000 amateur accountants taking a whack at it, saying, and anybody else that wants to get them, just trying to look for, a gotcha. This is private.
Yeah.
This is what really bothers me, is that it is. I'll show you guys the code provision, but it's not just Trump either. So there's the New York Times did its piece on Trump. And, you know, I would say that it cast him in a pretty negative light. But Biden did this stuff, too. And what people forget is that when Joe Biden got out of, or Vice President Biden got out of office, in those following couple years, he made somewhere north of $13 million. And he and his wife did not run that money like a sole proprietorship. They ran it through S corporations. And there's been articles written about how much money he saved by doing so. Mm-hmm. But by all estimations, because he avoided the old age, death and survivors and the Medicare tax by using the S corp, because you're not taxed on that punishing tax above your salary when you're going through an S corp, he saved, by all estimates, about $500,000. And you don't hear much about that, right? But of course, he paid a lot more tax personally as a percentage of his income than perhaps Trump did. We don't know because we haven't seen all the returns. What we know is only what the New York Times said in their article, which is 10 out of 15 years, he did not pay any tax. What they don't say is, well, what did he do in those other 5 years?
And a lot of times these big tax breaks that you hear about, for example, use the president's Trump building that he took a very large deduction for. Mm-hmm. A lot of these tax breaks are more deferral based than just completely you'll never have to pay the tax. So if he was to sell that building, he would end up having a very low cost basis in that building.
Yeah.
And would pay substantial taxes on it when he sold it.
Exactly. And I should note, by the way, we have Elliot on here, tax. He's an attorney and an accountant. Mm-hmm. And a fantastic guy. He's answering some of your questions. So if you see him, trying to think, I have Susan and Patty on. I wasn't fair. Should have told you guys, we have people working really hard to get your questions answered and to make sure that everything's going well. I can see a lot of commentary here. So that I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that it's not just Jeff and I, that there's other individuals answering your questions. And there's always hundreds of people on these I'm trying to look right now. We're over 400 folks on live. And again, we have a lot of people that just listen to the podcast, et cetera. It's a good group. About somewhere around the 10,000 range that request the event every 2 weeks. So that's good. Kind of going back, Jeff, what you said is 100% accurate. And what a lot of people don't realize is that he's cramming his deductions into a small range of time. Just like you would, if let's say that I used an example yesterday on this. If you're a doctor, and you're making $1 million a year in taxes, or $1 million, and you invest in some equipment for your practice, and that equipment, you buy it and you finance it over the next 20 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is, you could choose to accelerate the depreciation and write all that off in year one. But now you don't get any more deduction. And so they always act like this is some sort of, you know, horrible thing. And I'm like, wait a second, this is exactly what you want. Now you're going to pay tax over time because they don't get to write it off twice. And they have a tax appetite, meaning they may buy more equipment. And so they're doing exactly what the code is incentivizing. And that's exactly what Trump is doing. He's buying real estate. And if you haven't figured out that real estate's the holy grail of tax planning, you know, you need to spend a little more time with us, because real estate is the holy grail of tax planning. It's literally, they're giving you right now under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act and the CARES Act, they're giving us all sorts of incentives to jump in. So let's see. Oh, somebody says it'd be nice to see you and I instead of staring at something. Here, I'm going to give you guys something fun. Years ago, there was it was Justice Rehnquist. And I think this is the transcript of a hearing in the Old Dominion case. And I just grabbed it. So you guys aren't going to be able to read the little words. I'm just going to pull up the part where they're responding to the government. This was on carry back of losses as to whether you could carry them back 2 years versus 10 years on, I forget the type of loss it was. I believe it was a casualty loss. And so the reason this is important is because this is exactly what Trump did. They released it and said, hey, instead of going back 2 years, you carried it back 5 years. And all he did is took advantage of the law as Congress passed it. And now they want to beat him over the head with it. Mm-hmm. This was the exact same scenario in a case. And here's exactly what Rehnquist said. He goes, Mr. Jones, there's nothing wrong with the strategy to avoid the payment of taxes. The Internal Revenue Code doesn't prevent that. It seems like we want to beat up on people for taking advantage of the laws as written.
Right.
Now, speaking of the laws as written, some of you guys know that there's a code out there that prevents individuals from disclosing your tax return. It's a private document. They're not supposed to have it. Now, some of you guys might remember a resident of the federal penitentiary now, a lawyer by the name of Avenatti, who was in the press quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And he came about some reports, a suspicious activity report by a gentleman by the name of John Fry, who worked for the government. And he, you know, they disclosed it and they ended up in the papers, and he used it in his lawsuit. And ultimately made a big brouhaha over information that was illegally disclosed. You know who went to jail besides Avenatti? But Avenatti didn't go to jail over this. You know who went to jail on that one? John Fry. And then you have Natalie Edwards feeding BuzzFeed the FinSec, the federal crimes report on Manafort. And yeah, they got Manafort and it went out in the news and it was all over the place. But you know who else went to jail? Natalie Edwards. Because she illegally, like, you're not supposed to do this. You're weaponizing the administration. It kind of makes me sad. Why aren't they able to prosecute the New York Times? Why do we keep having this? And this is actually the Julian Assange opinion, where you had the court rule 6-3 in favor of the First Amendment, preventing the recipient of illegal documents from being held responsible. So this is good cocktail hour stuff where you can throw this out and you could put your finger out, your pinky out and say, hey, this is it. Anyway, what is that? Oh, I know. We're looking at it going, all right. Here's the stuff that actually came out in the New York Times. They said President Trump paid $750 in taxes in 2016 and 2017. He also donated his entire presidential pay. He had a big fat zero in income tax in 10 of the 15 years. The tax records show he made hundreds of millions of dollars a year, yet racks up chronic losses and aggressively employs to avoid taxes. you have to decide whether you think that's a bad thing or whether maybe it's the lawmakers that need to have a long, hard look and say, what type of things are we incentivizing?
And, you know, the key word there is he avoids taxes. He doesn't evade taxes. Mm-hmm. They're polar ends from each other.
Yeah. Somebody says, who wants to talk about taxes and politics? This is taxes. This is cocktail hour. I look at it and I say, smart accountants. You know, one thing about Trump is he said, I hire good people. He apparently hired a pretty good accountant because they're doing a good job of accelerating its depreciation.
He's probably got an army of tax accountants.
I would imagine so. But the funny thing is I think that they wanted his tax returns because they could show that he was beholden to Putin and all that. And
but those returns are not going to show that.
I know. That's why they keep saying, why do you keep asking for the tax returns? It's not going to say his financial disclosures. But here's another one is what Trump uses quite often. And I'm going to relate this and I'll get out of this is I'll relate this to something that's happened here in Las Vegas. So we have an area of town in Summerlin, Queens Ridge. Mm. And Snoop Dogg used to live in, I think, the towers there, Queensbury or something like that. Anyway, they have a golf course. And the developer, the golf course wasn't making any money. So now he's let it go brown and he's going to build, I mean, like he let it die and he's going to build on it. Well, all these people that bought, you know, lots on the fairway on a golf course are now going to have people in their backyard. And they're madder than hops because I'm sure if you moved on to a golf course, you'd expect it to stay a golf course. One of the things Trump does do with his golf course is he gives away the development rights to conservation charities. In English, what that means is nobody can develop the land. And so if you have a piece of property that if you developed it was worth $20 million and you give away the development rights, so it's just going to stay an open area, it might drop the value down to $10 million, right? So you get to take as a deduction, the $10 million as a charitable deduction. And Trump has done that on just about every one of his golf courses.
And he's not the first one I've seen. I've had a client that did that with his golf course and got millions of dollars in that conservation easement.
No, somebody asked, has Trump paid millions of taxes since announcing his candidacy? It depends on how you define has Trump paid. Because he has personal taxes that he's paying, real estate taxes that he's paying. He's paying taxes on the employer side of even household employees, and it runs in the tens of millions of dollars on an annual basis. So I would say yes. And his attorney says he has. His tax attorney said that that was contacted by the New York Times, says you're not understanding federal income taxes. He's not being required to pay federal income taxes, but a lot of these only offset your income tax, not your other types of taxes. And so what cocktail, somebody says they're drinking that red wine. We need something harder tonight, guys. This is going to be a shots. Anyway, the point being is just that a lot of people are just, you know, they're going to slide it however they, you know, whatever is in their best interest. So, for example, Biden avoided Social Security tax. And very easily you could say, hey, this is a guy who's getting up there saying he's going to defend Social Security, but he's not paying into it. His running mate, by the way, Kamala, did pay. She paid all, like they received their taxes, their distributions as a sole proprietorship. So she did writing and other things. Mm-hmm. As far as I could tell, she's paying self-employment tax on it. And so she could say, yes, I am for Social Security. But then somebody might say, oh, wait a second, there is no such thing as Social Security because they put it in the general fund and they don't actually put it aside. So,
right.
Yeah. So. Anyway, you don't need to hear me trancing on. Do you have anything to add on that, or can we get?
We'll save the Social Security Trust Fund discussion for another day.
Yes. Well, we're going to have to deal with it sooner than later, right? And so the answer to you guys is it depends on how you want to interpret it. It's that old Clinton. It depends on what your definition of is, right?
I think we need a keyword for the debate tonight, and everybody drinks keywords. So anytime somebody says it,
I think we need a safe word.
A safe word.
Yeah. Pepperoni. Means you back off. With rental properties, how many years of losses can you claim? So Brandon, you can carry forward losses indefinitely. You can carry them back if you are a real estate professional, meaning that they become net operating losses. You can carry those back 5 years. So what happened with, I'll just tell you exactly what happened with Trump is he was able to carry him back 2 years. So he accelerated depreciation on a building and to the tune of 70 some odd million dollars that he could not take that he was going to carry forward, which means you're not going to pay tax in the future. And then they changed the law and says, if you want, you can carry it back. I can't remember whether it was 4 or 5 years. I think it's probably five.
It was 5 years.
5 years. Okay. Sometimes I think it's four, but I think you're right. It's 5 years.
During the Great Recession.
And so he carried it back. He carried it back those additional years and got this big tax refund. And apparently that's what's causing the audit. And so the big question is, are his passive losses ordinary? And somebody says, do you have to be a licensed real estate professional? No. The test is a section called 469C7, where there's an exception to the passive activity loss rules, and it's 750 hours also being your major source, your personal major source of income is in the construction, development, or sale of real estate, even not your own. One spouse has to qualify, and then you have to materially participate with your real estate. So probably the question with Trump is whether he materially participates, right? Because he runs his development companies, but there's probably a question as to, like, he's definitely a real estate professional if you look at what he does every day when he's not being a president before that. I imagine the question really becomes down to is maybe material participation.
Maybe material participation. I was wondering if there was any cancellation of debt, but I think the only time he would have had that was in entities that filed bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And in that case, there is no cancellation of debt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what gets weird. So there's a few things that are a mystery to us, and maybe we'll actually see more information and we could do it. You guys have a lot of questions. Let's answer this question, then I'll go to a bunch of your questions online. We'll knock them out. Can you withdraw some earnings from a Roth IRA if you have held it for 5 years or more and you are under 59.5 years old, so 59 and a half years old? Jeff.
Yes. So the qualifiers are you're over 59 and a half or you've held the Roth for 5 years. There's a couple other special cases like for inheritance and death and disability. So yes, if you've held the Roth for 5 years, even if you're under 59 and a half, you can take earnings out. Keep in mind, your contributions are never taxed when you pull those out, and they always come out before your earnings come out. Oh, the code section for that is 480 big A, not to be confused with just A, 480 big A, subparagraph D2.
You are a nerd.
I know.
I was going to try to look that up. I was getting all slick. So 480 big A, what is it, C2?
D2.
D as in dog, 2. So whoever's out there looking, so that means that a kid, let's say that you're 22 years old and you put money into a Roth and 5 years later, so you're let's say you're seven years later, you're in your late 20s and you need the money. You can take it out with no penalty, no interest, no nothing?
Correct. But you are going to pay tax on the earnings.
All right. So you are.
Oh, wait. No, I'm sorry. You're right.
You're not going to pay.
You're not going to pay any tax at all.
Which is pretty good. So can't you annuitize the Roth if under 59? No. You're thinking of something else. You're thinking of a section 79, and it's there is a 72T, excuse me, a 72T on a traditional where you decide to spread it out. You still pay tax on that. Really, there's no required distributions under Roth.
Correct.
Yeah.
There's no RMDs.
Now, somebody says, can you take money out for a home and things like that? You could take it out of a traditional.
You can also take it out of Roth. So if you do take it out early, you could exempt up to $10,000 for the first-time home buyer.
Yep. There's a few little things, like if you're in financial hardship. And then the big one this year, which went away 2 days ago. So I shouldn't even tell you guys this, because if you needed to do it, you're going to be really mad at me. But we talked about it, was the $100,000. It was $100,000 early withdrawal from your IRA, 401k, 403b, 457. You could take an early withdrawal, and as long as you pay it back within 3 years, there's no 10% penalty or income tax. It's treated as a trustee-to-trustee rollover. So that went away on September 27th. You could still borrow from your plan up to $100,000 if your administrator allows it. So. Some people, if you have your own 401k or a solo 401k, you just say yes, and then we'll go from there. Okay, we got a bunch of questions, and somebody says, is there a way to see everybody's questions? Jay, no, because people are putting stuff up here, and if I guarantee you, if I put 1,500 people online and let you guys see everything, they're going to solicit. We already see it in some of our other events, and so I'm just, no, I don't want you guys, your name to be tied to something that you type in, because you may be saying, hey, I did XYZ, and I want you guys to ask the question, not like be worried that someone's going to rat you out. So anyway, so can you please clarify on the tax reduction or exemption for first-time homebuyers? Yeah, if you're a first-time homebuyer, you can withdraw money out of your plan, your traditional IRA.
I think, yeah, I don't think you can do it in a 401k.
Without penalty. So like you might not have to pay tax, like you'll have to pay income tax on it, mm-hmm. but you won't have to pay the penalty tax.
And first-time homebuyer doesn't mean the first time you bought a home. It's the strangest thing. It actually means you haven't owned a home. I believe it's within the past 2 years.
It's some period of years. I'm not looking at it right now, but yeah. What we would say is if you're in a situation where you need the funds, talk to us and we'll see whether there's any reasons you can get it out. Somebody says, I thought you pay tax on Roth earnings when you're less than 59 and a half, regardless of the 5 years. The difference is the 10% penalty. We'll look at it. And I know for certain that you can take the money out. Maybe it is the penalty that you avoid. And then you pay a little tax on the earning.
Yeah, it could be.
So we'll look at it. We'll either have Elliot Diggett or Jeff here is rapidly going into his, what is that, an iPhone?
No.
Right. What is that?
It's a Google phone.
Google phone. See, I have the iPhone. Jeff has the Google phone.
That's the difference.
He's giving me the stink eye because he thinks I'm defending Trump and I'm teasing.
But you got an Apple phone, so it turns out you're a liberal.
I know. Some secret, I'm a closet liberal. All right. I'm confused about borrowing from your 401k. Can you borrow, loan yourself up to half the value or up to 100,000? It's actually 100% this year. And there's a couple moving pieces to it. It's $100,000 up to 100%. So if you have $100,000 sitting in a 401k, you could borrow the whole amount out. You don't have to pay interest in 20, or it's deferred, excuse me, in 2020. You'd start in 2021. So, you know, when it was early this year, they said, oh, you have 6 years to pay it back, which essentially. What ends up being now is you pay it back over 5 years starting next year. So first quarter, come March, you'd make your first quarterly payment and you pay it in equal amounts over 5 years. So 20 quarters, I guess, something like that. 20 quarters?
20 quarters for 5 years.
Yeah. Isn't it? I don't know. Seems like it. You'd pay it quarterly over 5 years at about 4%. And I think you could actually set it to be monthly too. I know that one. That's 60 months. Trying to do my math. Sometimes quarters mean thirds in accounting. And I don't think this is one of those cases.
Yeah. With an employer plan, they can, I think they have some leeway to decide what that term is. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be longer. It's going to be shorter.
Right. So it depends on your plan documents if you did it. Says, do we have the same CARES Act loan abilities with pension plans? Yes, Dion, you could absolutely. And again, so sometimes I tell people, look, if you're hurting for money, COVID's been tough on a lot of folks, or if you have economic opportunities, you have a property you can buy or something like this, you may as well borrow it from yourself. You're paying yourself back that interest, and it's a pretty good interest rate. But now you're putting your money to work as opposed to having it sit and, you know, dealing with what's going on in the market. And the S&P 500 and Dow Jones have been recovered, which we knew they would, but it's a lopsided recovery. You have the S&P 5 and then the S&P other 495. The other 495 hasn't done so well. The S&P 5, which is, you know, your Amazon, Apple, Google, Netflix, what am I missing? And Facebook are killing it, but not everybody else. So it really was. Somebody says, wasn't the deadline for CARES 3-year distribution until the end of the year? No. The first distribution, they gave it a period of days. I think it ended on September 27th, I believe. And again, you could always look this up if it's relevant to you. Somebody says, if I start a solo 401k before the end of the year and roll over an IRA, can I still take 100% loan this year? Yes. From IRS Q4, what is coronavirus rated distribution? Yeah, it has to be related. Like you have to have been affected. You make a statement. Hey, I was affected. Oh, it says related issues made from eligible from January 20. Oh, it looks like they may have given it a full year. So they may have extended it. Under the CARES Act, it was a period of days, but it looks like they may have extended it. So if you want to look at that, it was just a one-off. We could always look it up for you too. All right. There was a couple more questions. Somebody's asking about options. Where did it say, if I run my business from home and take home office, do I need to pay those deductions later? It depends on how you do it. A home office deduction that is done through your sole proprietorship is depreciation recapture, and you could be looking at up to 25% tax on it. If you're doing a home office reimbursement through an S or a C corp, then, or LLC tax as an S or C corp, then no, you wouldn't have to worry about it. What is the best structure entity to have for option trading to minimize task payment and take deductions? I think it means tax. So do you want to hit on that one?
No, go ahead.
When you have a brokerage account and you're trying to take deductions against it for your expenses, it's a little bit of a problem because number one, they call you an investor and they don't let you take normal deductions. Even more importantly, they don't consider you a trader business unless you meet a really high threshold. And the threshold is a moving threshold. If you're around 1,000 trades a year, you'll probably be okay. If you are under that threshold, you're in kind of a gray area to about 700. And then if you're under 700 trades, it's pretty much a no. If you do try to take deductions as an investor, you're under Schedule A. Or if you're trying to take deductions by paying a manager, you're under Schedule A. Used to be that you would be able to take miscellaneous itemized deductions and write some of those off, and now they're gone. Problem.
Yeah.
So they did away with it under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act.
So what we like to do is have a partnership or LLC.
Yes.
With you as one member and your corporation as the other member.
So what Jeff is saying, I'll draw it up for you guys. Some of you guys are still yelling at me because you can't see the questions. We never put your questions up. So he says, put the brokerage account here, and this could be either an LP or an LLC, but whatever the case, it is taxed as a partnership, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what's the other component?
As far as you mean having the corporation be a member?
Yeah, then you have a corporation managing the LLC or being a partner for tax purposes. And this might be 10%, 90%. And the reason we do this is because if we pay the corporation, we have something called a guaranteed payment. They call it a guaranteed payment to partner. And plus it gets its percentage. And then you use the corporation to expense things. And the 90% flows down to you after it's paid. If you need to pay it more, you can.
So any of those investment expenses, like you buy Investors Daily or your software or any number of things, those would be expenses to the corp. We don't want them in the partnership because there's no place to deduct them on your return.
Mm-hmm. You miss it. Good one. Somebody just asked a related question. They had health insurance premiums of $9,000 that were limited because the partnership only had $4,000 of income. What happens to that? So they had loss. Sounds like they only were able to pay the corporation a small amount. They, you know, guaranteed payment, you can make a loss, by the way.
Yeah.
So it just carries forward as being reimbursable later on. So you don't lose it, but the day you pay it is the day that you actually have a loss. If it's a capital loss, which this wouldn't be, this would actually be an ordinary loss.
It'd be ordinary loss, yeah.
Yeah, we don't have to go down that path. Capital losses are limited to capital, your capital gains, or if you run out of capital gains, $3,000. Let's see. Toby mentioned someone makes $3 million a year. So you were listening to one of my other classes. We're using an example. So here's your example. And I'm just going to give you guys broad ones. I don't want to. Let's say there's you and you have company one. And company one does, let's just say company one sells widgets, or sells X, widget X. And let's say that all that income flows down to you. So company one is more than likely an S corp. And so all that income flows down to you. So if company one makes $3 million, $3 million is going to end up on your 1040. And that's going to leave a divot. It's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
The best things I can tell you, if that's you, is, you know, charities are going to be your friends, oil and gas, real estate, anything to try to offset, defined benefit plans, defined contribution plans. We're looking at anything we can do to shave off that $3 million. Now, what if you have other taxpayers? Let's say that you have kids. So, for example, in Trump's case, he was paying about 20% of his income that was coming through his companies to Ivanka. But we could pay, I'm not saying pay that much, but you could pay something to people that actually earn it. So if you have kids, that might help. If you don't have kids, then we look at other taxpayers. And our other taxpayers, we're going to fall into categories like retirement plans, and that would be more than likely a DB or defined contribution. And if any of this goes over your head, guys, by all means, join us for a tax and AP class. We teach them at least once a month. Be on the lookout. We will give you a free access to come to a tax and asset protection the one day. Usually when we teach them live, they're 3 days, but we get into a lot of this. But let's just say that I'm going to have some go to the retirement, Or if I can put on another hat, it could go to company two. And company two could be taxed as a C corp, which means it's taxed at a flat 21%. So you do save some money if you're going to leave the money sitting in capital two. Does the kid have to be over 18? No, they just have to be able to do something. There's kids that are in the tax court cases that are 9 and 10, and they're earning pretty good money, especially in the arts. They're actors, things like that. But realistically, make sure you're paying your kid fair market wages. Just, you know, talk to your accountant or go Google it and say, what could they be paid? But let's just say that we paid company two. Now, company two can't be in the exact same business of selling X, but company two can be doing things like marketing, taxes, bookkeeping, management. We always call them management corporations. They could be steering and doing all the vision. And every time you're an executive, you put on your hat for company two. And every time you're a salesman, you're putting on your hat for company one. All you have to show is that this is documented and reasonable. And now we can move money that would be flowing into your 37% tax bracket and move it over here into the 21%. So we save 16%. So you have to ask yourself whether it's worth it. And then once that money's there, now they're looking at, hey, what about accumulated earnings tax, which I've never seen anybody get hit with that.
Accumulated earnings tax is pretty easy to beat. All you need is a plan for what the tax is on is when you keep accumulating money into your corporation. What you need is just to have a written plan of what you're planning on doing with that money. Yep. Your working capital. Are you planning on lending it out? Is it doing something other than just sitting there avoiding taxes?
Yeah. Do you have a reason for it? Because we have publicly traded companies that have billions of dollars sitting in them.
Right.
And they're always like, yeah, we might have an acquisition. So you might, you know, the other thing is this guy, I just said, hey, we'll just make it a lender. And in this particular case, this gentleman had cash desires for other companies. And so it could become a lender to those other companies. Now, if it's in the business of lending, we don't have to worry about personal holding company at all. But if it's just doing periodic, it's not really, it's just lending off and it makes too much on interest. Realistically, mm-hmm. a savings account or what not. And if it exceeds, I think it's 50 to 60%.
60%. Yeah.
60%. So it exceeds 60% from what would it be? Rent, royalties,
interest, and dividends.
Interest. Yeah. And dividends. Then it would be a personal holding company and it basically taxed at about 37%.
Yeah. That portfolio income that you're looking at there gets taxed at an additional 20% on top of the tax.
But keep in mind that it just made $1 million in management fees. So you'd have to make an awful lot of loans to push it into the personal holding company issue. It's not even an issue. So anyway, so that's kind of fun. Somebody who says that they're about ready to be done with the COVID and come and hang out. Yeah, it's more fun. All right. Something says, do you have any recommendation term words when naming a new management C corp? Yeah, I don't really care too much. I've never seen that used except when you use banking and things and financial terms, and then it's usually the state. The IRS doesn't really care. What they care about is there an agreement? And I'll just give you a little trick here. I don't say whenever I'm setting up, but almost always, probably 92% of the time, when we set up a management company, it's an actual statutory manager of the entity. So it's statutory. We don't have to have the agreement. It's by terms of the statute, it is a manager. So that'd be good. So we don't even have to sit there and have the separate agreement hammered out, although we do that too. But you actually are a statutory manager. If you are in a limited partnership, for example, we make sure that the C corporation is the general partner. Mm-hmm. It's because then statutorily, it's entitled to be paid reasonable compensation. And then somebody says, for a trading business example, is it easier just to do everything through an S corp? In the very beginning, depending on whether you're going to zero it out, the answer is yes. If you just use a corporation, I tend to like C corps because I can reimburse all of my medical, dental, vision, including my co-pays and deductibles. And so for most people, that's, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 a year at a minimum. On the high end, probably on to $9,000 or $10,000. I get to write that off. And whereas in an S corp, I don't. So I'm generally speaking going to side with starting with the C corp, which is the opposite of what your accountant's going to say, because they immediately think you're making $1 million and distributing it as a dividend, which is silly. But when was the last time you saw a dividend by a private company?
I see them occasionally, but not very often. Yeah. Maybe once or twice a year.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird. Difference between an S and a C corp. S flows onto your return automatically. It goes on page 2 of your Schedule E. It comes via K-1. And C corp pays its own tax. And somebody says, can you write off Medicare fees? Anything that comes out of your pocket, you can reimburse if it's medical, dental, or vision. Anything that comes out of your pocket.
And if you're an S corporation and you're doing the health insurance, you should also be reimbursing yourself for Medicare, because that's also considered self-employed health insurance.
Yep. So absolutely. So it's almost always going to be better if you have high medical expenses, be a C, or at least have it in the in your, what do you call it? Your arrows. We'll use the Speaker Pelosi. I have arrows in my quiver. Put it in your quiver. Can a C corporation operate with two different DBAs? Yes. Having two different NAICS codes? I don't know about the two different NAICS. I believe it can. If not, you create a subsidiary. Has the question regarding the home in Mexico been answered? No, we're going to get to that here pretty quick. I'm going to zip through some of these. If I live in one state and use my home office for a tax deduction, but have rented an apartment in another state for business purposes, can I use the apartment for business deduction utilities as well?
We may have different opinions on this. I think this, for this to work out best, the apartment in the other state probably needs to be rented by the entity or the business.
Yeah, I could agree with that. Otherwise, if you did it, it's still an administrative office. And if you have a second home, I actually looked this up because it was a client in California. Mm-hmm. Get this. So husband and wife, and the husband was a college professor and had a home office where he did a lot of his stuff. But then he had a house that he rented down by the college so he could work during the day. It was like basically his office.
Okay.
Because the campus one was too chaotic. So he did it. He's able to do both. He wasn't a employee of the university. He had his own consulting company and was contracted with.
So let's say I'm paying $1,000 a month for rent plus utilities and other whatnot. What portion of that am I able to deduct?
Well, if it's only for business purpose. So if I have that apartment simply for business, then it's 100%. In other words, I'm just using it when I travel there and I don't use it personally. Mm-hmm. Then it'll be 100%. But if it's just a second house that I use, but sometimes I go and use it, then I'm going to have to cordon off what portion is business and I'm only going to get a percentage.
So by using it personally, I can actually taint that 100%.
Absolutely. I would just use it as an office and say it's exclusively used for office. If I want 100%, I have to. I don't have a choice. If I have, let's say, you know, I have a home office. This is a buzzword that we don't like. Do not do home office. You want to do an administrative office in your home. And the reason being is a home office is only for sole proprietors and you have depreciation recapture. Mm-hmm. Administrative office in your home is under an accountable plan. So when a company reimburses you for its use of your house, you don't have to report it anywhere. Kind of cool. All right. I want to get through this. There's one question here. With the election coming up, candidate promises to raise the C-Corp tax. What happens if that candidate wins? Should you change tax status? How soon should you do it?
Yeah, I've thought about that. And if you were an S and changed to a C corp with the tax law change, you got to wait 5 years before you can change back to an S again. Like we often say, you got to crunch the numbers to figure out what works out best.
Yeah.
In this case.
Yeah, I would say don't do anything because the president doesn't get to change the laws. So you wouldn't know that with the bevy of executive orders that are shooting out there. Now governors think they're presidents too, because Congress still has to change things. And if Congress raises it, it doesn't mean you have to keep operating. Like I wouldn't change it to an S. I would just close my C and open up a new S, mm-hmm. transfer the assets of the old into the new, or buy it and say, hey, I'm going to buy your assets. And then somebody says, move to an island. Move to Puerto Rico, where like I think you don't really have to pay taxes there. How do you set up an accountable plan? Manu, it has to be an S or a C corp, or an LLC taxed as an S or a C corp. In the administrative office in the home cannot be done by a sole proprietor because you can't be an employee of a sole proprietor, nor can it be used by a partnership when you are a partner. So Eva, I hope that answers your question. We need to have an S or a C corp floating around in there from a tax standpoint. But what are the laws for purchasing a vehicle for business to use as a deduction?
Well, if you're going to purchase it inside the business.
Yeah, so we'll say business buys You have to be 50% or greater, right?
Right. So you're not going to be able to take the grand deductions if you're using it for personal.
Track miles. And if you fall below that 50%, you have this heinous recapture at ordinary tax. And the business buys or you buy. If you buy, you just have a mileage reimbursement. You have to track miles no matter what. And I think that's 58 cents.
Yeah, last I looked, it was 58 or 55.
Yeah, I should look. I have something floating around here. It's probably 2019. Yeah. Oh, bless it. Yeah, I'll have to look. I think you're right. It's either 55 or 58 cents. It fluctuates, and sometimes they move it around. Sometimes it goes up when energy is expensive. Right now, it's low, so it's probably closer to the 55. But then you don't have to report anything.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody says, does business have to earn revenue before buying a vehicle? No. Here's the hidden one. The answer is no, first I've met it. But the bigger one is your insurance is going to be more expensive with the business, so be careful about buying a car through it. You have to get commercial insurance.
Yeah, my personal feeling is if you don't absolutely need a vehicle in that business to perform that business, you probably should just put it in your personal name, deduct the mileage,
mm-hmm.
reimburse for the mileage.
Yeah, somebody says, if you buy a custom van with an area to sleep and a bathroom, should you buy it personally or deduct it as a mobile home through the business?
No, you can't do that because it doesn't have a kitchen.
Right. Let's just say it has a kitchen in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, then, you know, what I would do is I would say, no, you're always better off reimbursing mileage because you're going to have personal use. And here's the deal. Personal use, if the business has, you have tax on personal use. It's going to tax you at its lease value of the portion. So it could be pretty ugly.
Yeah, we used to do that for a client who actually purchased company vehicles for his people, his employees. And every year we'd have to do W-2 adjustments to add on that personal use.
Somebody asked a good question. Charitable deductions. You have a $300 above the line deduction this year, which means I can give $300 to a charity and I don't have to do itemized. And you have a 100% AGI limit this year. So you can give away all of your income to a charity and write it all off. So only in 2020, then it goes back down to the 60% and nothing above the line.
Yeah, and because of the tax law changes in 17, 2018 and 2019 have not been particularly good years for the charities.
Yeah, it's been ugly.
Yeah.
Because people struggle, and we need to use the charities more, unless you're a BLM, which we won't touch, or Thousand Oaks or whatever. Some, it's feast or famine, so some just have had a ton flow through, and then others are being shunned. They're not getting anything. Is there a way to get around being taxed from gains, profit from doing flips?
I wouldn't call it getting around, but what you're going to do is you're going to find other expenses to run against that income.
Yeah, you're going to be an S or C corp or LLC taxed as an S or C corp because an LLC does not exist to the Internal Revenue Code. Those of you have been on around. And then you're going to do things like 401k, DB, expenses, equipment, which is expenses too, and you're going to minimize and try to get down and lower the amount of actual income. When you're flipping, it's no different than buying any other product and putting it on a shelf. You don't get to depreciate the flip. It's your basis, so it's the cost of goods sold. So when you sell, that's it. Somebody says, what's a DB? This is equal to a defined benefit plan. And a defined benefit plan, last year, the most we were able to put one in, we had one that was $615,000, right?
Holy cow.
Some people are putting in $200,000-$300,000 a year tax-free. So
I have a client who the couple were both maximizing compensation and within the DB plan, so they will get to put a ton of money away. Yeah. I love the DB plans.
The DB plans are potent. You just have to do it. Guys, I'm going to jump into this one because we're already past an hour. If you're renting out a condo and taking depreciation on it and then the following year decided to live in the condo yourself, what would you do about the depreciation?
That depreciation stays right where it's at until you sell the property. If you sell the property at a gain somewhere down the road, you may have what we call depreciation recapture.
Recapture is when you write something off. So you're taking a deduction against the house or the condo here. And when you sell it, then it's not capital gain. It's depreciation recapture at your ordinary rate capped at 25%. So I'm going to tell you guys, I usually, sometimes I give away our book. I see a lot of questions about S and C and some of the more kind of the basic stuff. So Patty, if you're listening, if we have the link to give away TaxWise, I know that I don't expect you to put it up anywhere, but for some of these people, like Ying and some of these others, if you could give them the book, just let them know to reach out and we'll send it out to them so that they can read up a little bit on it. Because I know some of these concepts will go past them, you guys, but I wrote all about it and I'd be happy to give you a, I think we'll make sure that we give you an electronic version. If you want the hard copy, that's fine too, but want to make sure that you guys, we're all good on the same page.
You know, something that often confuses people on this recapture though is your recapture will never be more than the total gain on what it is you sold. Mm-hmm. So if you have $20,000 of possible recapture and you only have a $10,000 gain, your recapture is only going to be $10,000. If you have a loss, you're not going to have any recapture. So
yeah, so it's only if you have gain.
It's only if you have gain.
And basically what it goes to recapture first and then everything else. Okay, everybody's asking for a copy of the book. So I just screwed up poor Patty. Maybe if you have the link out there, Patty, this is what I do sometimes. I like to make them hop on their toes. Either send an email to Patty or we'll send you guys a link later and we'll make sure that we get you a copy of TaxWise. It's TaxWise version 4. So it's TaxWise Business Ownership, 4th version. I know you'd say, why didn't you stop at 1? Because 2 is so much better. 3 is better. 4 is better. All right, let's go into this one. The Mexico. This gets really interesting. So somebody's selling a house in Mexico and they have this 35%. I think it's 32, but whatever. Gains tax. I'm being charged on the currency that is doubled 10-1 and 20-1. Can I avoid that? My home is not increased in value. Only currency got devalued. Do I need to pay capital gains tax or anything of the sort in the U.S.?
So when you purchase a property in foreign currency or purchase anything in foreign currency, mm-hmm. you value that at that point in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So if it was you bought it something for, say, 1,000 pesos, that would be worth $100. Mm-hmm. If you later sold it at 21, so you sold it for, 2,000 pesos, mm-hmm. that's still only going to be worth $100.
Exactly. It's not going to punish you. So what you'd end up doing is you'd end up going back and saying, what's that? When you sell it, you're going to put it back into U.S. currency. And so if it hasn't gone up in value, all that's going to happen is you're going to get back to $100,000 and you're not going to pay anything on tax. The other thing, and it just happens to be Mexico because we have one of our accountants is an accountant in Mexico. Also, if you lived in it as your primary residence in Mexico, then you pay no tax. Now in the U.S., let's say you move here. Now the U.S. is going to tax everything that you make anywhere if you are a resident. So you don't even have to be a U.S. citizen. You can literally move here and be in green card or reside here. The second you decide to reside here, it's going to want to tax that too. But if you lived in it, we have something called IRC 121, which allows you to avoid the tax if you're single on $250,000 of capital gains on the sale of your house, or if you're married, $500,000. So single, married, filing jointly. So it still applies even if you have a foreign residence. Mm-hmm. And do you agree with all that?
Yes. 121 applies against your primary residence. The exclusion applies on your primary residence, regardless of where it's at.
Mm-hmm. And so I think this person may actually be on. So we have an accountant who's also an accountant in Mexico. So can you avoid the capital gains on the devalued currency? What we do is we break the home at, and we do the conversion and we'd see what's the actual value. So if the currency moved, it wouldn't actually create a taxable event just because the currency moved. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
We're going to sell it, whatever it gets converted into. So, you know, it's going to end up not being taxable. And if you lived in it, it's not going to be taxable. If that was your residence, it's not going to be taxable. There's ways to avoid.
And anytime you pay tax outside of the United States and you have to file a U.S. return, you want to let us know about that foreign tax you paid, because mm-hmm. it's possible you'll get either a credit for it or at least an itemized deduction for it.
Mm-hmm. Hey, somebody's asking about Mexican tax. Logan, if you want to email Patty, Lulu would be able to help you. She knows their stuff pretty well. Some other questions. Lots of people asking about the book. Sorry, Patty. going to get in trouble. They asked me right beforehand, hey, are you going to throw anything else at me? And I was like, no, I'm just going to do the Infinity Investing Workshop.
I was sure you said that.
Yeah. Somebody says, can you do a 1031 exchange and later move it into a property, into a personal residence?
Yes.
And then you just, I think it's 5 years that you can't do the 121 exclusion. So the primary resident reduction, you have to have lived in it instead of two out of the last 5 years. I think that you can't have done, I don't think you can 121 it within that. I think you have to wait 5 years, but we can look at it. Somebody says, can a husband and wife who are separated but not divorced claim primary residence? They live separately. So this is where it gets weird. Yes and no. Yes, the time that you live together and that still counts for the person remaining. But for the actual time frame, the 24 months, they're going to look and say, how much of it did you guys live together in it? And then they're going to say, who owns it at the end? If you got it in a divorce decree and you ended up owning the house just your own separately, so let's say they separate and I put the house in my name, mm-hmm. they still let you have the marital amount. If you sell it, they're going to treat it as being one. I think if it's sold within a certain time frame, I think it's 2 years, but I'm not sure. Anyway, and there's Joe. Oh, buddy from Tacoma. So I see him. He's getting a book. Joe, you can reach out to me, brother. I can always get it. Patty's going to be really slow. You should reach out to Toby. All right, I'm just teasing. My cousin and I are looking to purchase a flip property. Can we both use our separate LLCs for the transaction, or is it better to create a new partnership LLC?
Let's assume that each of you have a disregarded LLC, but you're the sole owner. You can do what's called tenants in common in that case, where you own a certain portion, he owns a certain portion. Mm-hmm. The books are all done together, and then you take your share of the income and your share of the expenses and report each on your own return. Mm-hmm. If the LLCs are owned by more than one person, I don't believe you're able to do that.
What I would do, since you each have an LLC, so we have one and two, the existing, so LLC one, LLC two, is I would set up a partnership, an LLC three, so that whoever's going to manage it, like you could actually specify, hey, I'm the manager, so someone doesn't do anything weird with it. Mm-hmm. You get into a tenant in common, they have the right to occupy. They can do all sorts of stuff that obligates you on that account. I'd rather have it to where they're going to at least look at a partnership agreement or the operating agreement of the LLC. So, and then it's owned 50-50 by your respective LLCs.
No, I agree with that. Tenants in common usually need a really good property manager to do things. Another thing I've seen with tenants in common is there's nothing to prevent you from selling your interest to somebody else.
Yep. So they could go, along comes the ex-spouse and says, hey, I really want to get so-and-so back.
Great.
No. Somebody says, I might have missed this. How can I avoid paying taxes from withdrawing 401k for real estate investment? You can borrow it up to $100,000 this year. And guys, I know there's a couple questions about the CARES Act. Send me an email or send Patty an email or just go to Tax Tuesday. Here, I'll give you guys all the numbers here. First off, you can always listen to our podcast. We put all of the Tax Tuesdays into podcasts. I think we do two per session, so you don't have to listen to, sometimes we go 2 hours. Tonight we're going to get done a little early so you guys can watch the debates. And there's a nice one. You've been with us for 11 years, and that's awesome. Yeah, that's my buddy Joe. Yeah, Joe, we should, feelings mutual. You guys are always good. And he's up there by our office in Tacoma, but I've had a few conversations with Joe that I still recall. Good man. Leave it at that. You can go into the iTunes and you'll see them. Sometimes they're sitting there. It'll say Tax Tuesday, Tax Tuesday. We should call it Tax Tuesday with Jeff and Toby so that I don't see my name all over the place. Sorry, man. That's just mean. And so here's all of our wonderful podcasts. So you can go in and listen to them. We usually send you the recordings too. And I know it's sometimes heavy, but you guys might be surprised when you go back and listen what little things you're catching, because I'm getting stuff from Jeff the whole time. I'm getting stuff from you guys. There's a bunch of CPAs and accountants and smart people out there on the chat that are chirping in sometimes. Usually if I don't know something, I'm going to learn it while we're doing this. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the coolest things. We don't sit here and do everything. Like, we're not, sometimes I'll grab something like tonight, the elections, and I'll grab a few slides. But when we get the questions, I give them to Jeff. He probably saw them, what, an hour before we started? We're going in, there's a huge list of questions that come in, and we're grabbing ones that are, I'm trying not to be super selective. I kind of randomly grab them and then make sure that they make sense and get into it. The giveaway, by the way, Infinity, come on October 17th. I know we're way out. Register anyway and share your with your friends. If you want to learn how to make money, I'm my new thing, which, by the way, today was the coolest because I had the guys that built an ETF there called Granite Shares. And we did an advanced class with them where they were explaining how their, you know, their philosophy on building their ETF. And we were making fun of mutual funds together because we like to do that. But they were doing it in a much nicer way than I do it. So the it's absolutely wonderful to you get to learn all sorts of cool stuff. I have guys that do build terrains. I have guys that do mobile home parks. We have guys that do RV parks. We have somebody says has the best gold ETF ever. Yep, they do. Granite Shares does have a great gold ETF. William Rind is a super nice guy. They're modest. They're super nice and they're very kind to share with us. But they have the one HIPS, which is an income producing ETF, which you guys can just go buy these, by the way. He's actually on the exchange. Like it's public ETFs, but it's making 10% plus yields right now because it got pushed down. There's nothing that's happened to their revenue. It's just they got pushed down with the pandemic, and people are like running and chasing after Tesla and Amazon, which is great. For us, it's when you go buy those things. Anyway, so it was fun to have them on there. We're big income people. I'd rather not have a company go up 100%. I'd rather have 10% of income shooting in year after year for the next 50, 60, 500 years, whatever you want it to be, and it just for an indefinite period of time tends to go up. So we're big income producing assets. And join us at that. If you like that sort of thing, jump on in. It's free. And you could share it with young people or anybody that wants to learn what we know, because Jeff and I and our team here sees tax returns all the time. And the people that make money aren't the ones telling you that they're making money. The people that tend to make money are the ones that are really quiet and they're just really cool and they're really chill. And so we see who makes it year after year, over and over again. And sometimes we go, whoa. And sometimes we're surprised because I'll say, do you know, like so-and-so, how much they're making? And Jeff will look and... Like when we run reports, sometimes we're like, whoa, you know, you have a seven-figure real estate earner, and you're just kind of laughing about it because that's earnings, guys. That's even after all the depreciation and everything else.
I have scoffed at a client's only to eat crow later.
Yeah. I just figured out that I don't know. Anyway, so you also can come on into the social media. Here's where you get your questions answered. If you have a question, you can certainly ask us. If you want the free book, by all means, use that too. I know it's going to go to Patty anyway. If you like taxes and you want to minimize your tax bill, we'll do everything we can to enable you to become Trump-esque in your tax planning. Whether you like the man or not, he is our president and he builds big projects, big buildings, big golf courses. He is doing exactly what Congress wants us to do and he's reaping some tax benefits. Oh, somebody says they go to Susan. Yes, they do, Susan. Sorry. But like it or not, if you really wanted to say who's had the biggest economic impact is the person that's building a building because they have thousands of people that are working on it and all that fun stuff. Congress writes these laws to incentivize that behavior. I think it's really mean and disingenuous to pick on people that do exactly what the tax laws say. And I'll just tell you from here, I'm going to do everything in my power for my clients to minimize their tax bill, because I know that if they save money, they're going to invest more. They're going to do other things with it. They're going to give more. They're going to tithe more. They're going to do more good for their communities than if I gave it all to the government. So that's a big part of this. So if we can help you guys build your portfolio and your fortune where you're not getting big chunks taken out of you so you can be more competitive. And I always relate it back to something kind of goofy, but IKEA still cracks me up because it's a nonprofit. I just love that. Mm-hmm. And all I could think of is people will be mad. Like I remember there was articles written like they're paying a total of 4% tax. They employ like 300,000 people across the country or across the world. It's a huge number and they bring in billions of dollars and they give it away. I'm for that. So I'm not gonna argue. The tax laws, they're there for a reason. It's usually to incentivize certain behavior. And I think that we get more from incentivizing people than by beating them over the head. And so think of that when you're hearing somebody bang on somebody for their taxes. I think that there's other things that they could be focusing on other than following the laws as they're written for behavior that's incentivized. And I'll just leave you with this. A lot of people bought electric cars because they got a tax credit and because they thought it would change things. Are you going to yell at them too for taking that tax credit? Anyway, was fun. Jeff, anything?
Nope. I'm going to get back to doing tax returns.
Yeah, Jeff's in the middle of it. I don't think Jeff will be back with us until after the tax deadline, right?
Yep.
I'll grab somebody else. I know somebody says this is the shortest session ever. No, it's 1 hour and 18 minutes. We are overtime. It's just we're less overtime than usually. So anyway, I just want to say I appreciate you guys. Go out there, do good things, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast, and if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.